And Chices says, "Other people's will, I do not doubt, still cast their bronze to breathe with softer features, or draw out of the marble living lines, plead causes better, trace the ways of heaven with wands and tell the rising constellations. But yours will be the rulership of nations. Remember, Roman, these will be your arts, to teach the ways of peace to those you conquer, to spare defeated people, tame the proud." In Latin, the word that's translated there as remember is memento. That is a future imperative. And Chices says, "Tu Romane memento," thou Roman shalt remember. A future imperative is much more solemn, much stronger than a present imperative. Compare don't kill and thou shalt not kill, and you'll get the sense of a future imperative. These are very, very strong words, and Anchises here obviously is to some extent recapping what I mentioned in an earlier lecture. The Greeks, other cultures, particularly the Greeks, are better at art, better at rhetoric, better at all sorts of things, but the Romans' particular excellence, what the Romans will do better than anyone else, is govern. And this is meant to resonate not just with Aeneas, but also with Virgil's audience. The end of Book 6, or near the end of Book 6, Anchises speaks another very famous set of lines. The last soul that he and Aeneas look at in the Pageant of Heroes is a young man, handsome, but walking along, looking sad and with his eyes cast down to the ground. Aeneas asks his father, "Who is that and why does he look so sad?" And Anchises tells Aeneas that this is Marcellus. He says, "My son, do not search out the giant sorrow your people are to know. The fates will only show him to earth, but they will not allow a longer stay for him. The line of Rome, O high ones, would have seemed too powerful for you if his gifts, too, had been its own." He goes on and ends this speech with saying to the boy whose soul he's looking at, "If only you could somehow break the bonds of fate, you will be Marcellus, tu Marcellus eris." Now, who is this Marcellus? Well, he's a nephew of Augustus, the son of Augustus' sister Octavia, and Marcellus was born in 42 BC, died in 23. Augustus had intended Marcellus to be his heir. He had married the boy, or had arranged for the boy to marry his own daughter, Augustus' own daughter Julia, but then Marcellus died. The tradition is preserved by later authors, tells us that Virgil read these lines aloud to Augustus and Augustus's sister Octavia, and that at these words, "Tu Marcellus eris," Octavia fainted dead away. It's a good story, whether it's true or not. I like to think it is true. This is the last soul Aeneas sees in the underworld, in the Pageant of Heroes. Then Book 6 ends with one of the most discussed passages in the Aeneid. Virgil tells us that there are two gates that lead out of the underworld, two gates of sleep, he says. One is a gate of horn, the other is a gate of ivory. And he tells us that through the gate of horn, an easy exit is given to true shades. The other is made of polished ivory, perfect glittering, but through that way the spirits send false dreams into the world above. And, he says, Anchises sends Aeneas and the Sibyl through the gate of false dreams. The critical issue here is what we're meant to take from that. Why does Virgil say that Aeneas exits the underworld through the gate of false dreams? As I say, this has been discussed at great length, and probably there will never be a complete critical consensus on the matter. It's sometimes suggested that all Virgil is saying here is Aeneas isn't a dream or a spirit. He's a living man, so he can't go through the gate that allows true dreams and true spirits into the world. I think that's far too simplistic. If that's all Virgil meant, why include the gate of horn and the gate of ivory at all? If he simply means to say, well, Aeneas isn't really a ghost, so he can't go through the ghost's exit. That seems to me there must be some other point there. It's sometimes suggested, and I rather like this suggestion, that we're meant to interpret from this the idea that somehow the glorious future that has been laid out for Aeneas, somehow what Aeneas hopes to accomplish in the second half of the Aeneid, is itself in some sense a false dream, that Anchises has presented only the glorious side of Roman history and has overlooked some of the pain, sorrow, suffering, and so forth, so that the pageant of heroes itself perhaps is in some sense a false dream. There are many other possible interpretations, but unfortunately, due to time, I can only offer you that one.